on WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Rick Knowlton with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, June 12th, 2025. While the Florida legislature ventures to cut back on the state budget, there is agreement to increase spending on education. Under the proposal, per-student spending would increase 1.59% this year. The National Education Association reports that Florida ranks 50th in the nation for average teachers' salaries. But according to World Population Review, Florida ranks 17th in cost of living. Also in the Florida budget, a significant reduction in mental health employees. The House proposes slashing 802 positions, while the Senate is considering cutting about 454. The cuts would hit the Department of Children and Families, DCF. While Governor DeSantis has been suggesting impunity for motorists harming protesters, 26-year-old Zachary DeGrosse is finding some limitations. DeGrosse landed in jail Wednesday after posting on X that he and his buddies would plow through every, quote, ignorant, un-American swine he sees protesting the deportation of illegal immigrants. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office explains that making such a threat is a felony and, quote, even if you don't intend to follow through with the action, we will arrest you. Sarasota's Gillespie Park has been fully restored following severe hurricane damage. With new benches and two-thirds of the playground replaced with new equipment, Gillespie Park is ready for your enjoyment. That's near downtown Sarasota between 7th and 10th Street, just west of Washington Boulevard. Sarasota County offers free self-service sandbags to prepare for the 2025 hurricane season. Available at three locations, but only one day each month. That's starting this Saturday, June 14th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To find the nearest location and view further dates, go to scgov.net. That's scgov.net. Also this Saturday, the 14th, Sarasotans are invited to celebrate our great diversity with a full lineup of entertainment from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Information at diversefest.com. This has been Rick Knowlton with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, June 12th, 2025.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. My guest today could never be accused of not having an opinion. My good friend, Eileen Hampshire. There's so many fabulous Eileens, right? Eileen Hampshire is a downtown merchant. Her store is actually nationally recognized, unique in its arena. It is art to walk on. But the reason Eileen is joining me today is she has been a longtime advocate for a thriving downtown business community, a thriving downtown in terms of quality of life. She has served on the Downtown Improvement District Advisory Board. She was a founder of DSA, the Downtown Sarasota Alliance, active in so many ways. Eileen Hampshire, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to ask you to, yes,
yeah,
there we go.
I realize.
I want to make sure I can hear you. I thought it would be so interesting because, you know, I'll come into your shop and you and I will talk about what's going on in life and the city. But you've been, how long have you been living here in Sarasota? And then how long have you been a merchant in downtown Sarasota?
Well, we moved here about 34 years ago.
Mm.
So that would be 19, I don't know if my math is going to be right, but it was about 1992.
Okay.
And it might have been 1991. And everything was lovely. We lived on Bay Island and had a lot of fun. And after a while, you get kind of tired of just going out to lunch and meeting friends. And so I went to lunch with my mom one day on Palm Avenue, Caragiulo's, and right across the street was a really nice store, and he had a little sign in the window that said gallery for lease. So I went in, made the arrangements, and went home and said to my husband, you might want to kill me. I think I just leased a gallery on Palm Avenue.
Because you all were retired, right? I mean, you weren't planning on going back to work.
No, I was basically young retirement age. Anyway.
I love hearing that. Go ahead.
That's it was really good. And,
yeah.
And it was, Palm Avenue was still, it was a fabulous street then.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming back to it, I think. I hope. But it was a very interesting experience. And I met a ton of wonderful people I would never have met had I stayed on Bay Island. I would have met some, but, you know.
You know, for me, walking into your shop, it's kind of like a museum in a way, because you sell what most people, oriental carpets, but, you know, handmade.
Yeah, everything is handmade.
Handmade rugs. Yeah. And they're antiques, many of them. And you're actually an expert in the nation. You know, there aren't many shops like that, right?
This is true.
This is true.
Yeah, and because most shops are businesses, and mine really began as a hobby, and in some ways it still is, but I love it.
There's a deep knowledge that you have of the culture and the history, and so it is a unique offering that Sarasota has, because even on the national scene, I travel pretty widely. You can't find this kind of shop. In most cities don't have it.
You're quite right. Even large cities, and you can get, not even in New York, because there are people who carry antiques, but it's a different thing. So this is something I've studied since 1961. I must have been five. And
So anyway, I bring that up because your appreciation of arts and culture is probably part of the reason that drew you to Sarasota. Is that fair to say?
No.
No? Was it the beach?
Well, we came here because my parents were here.
Oh,
and it was just a lucky accident. I mean, I'm so glad that we made the choice we did. Because really, everyone says Sarasota is unique. And often when people make those statements, they're not true. But I think in this case, Sarasota, I've lived in several places in the world. Mm. And Sarasota is really quite unique, and although we complain about it a lot and everybody can look for the wrinkles, and that's probably a bad term in Sarasota.
We all have them.
Yeah, I meant that's probably a bad thing, but
right.
You can look for the bad spots, but the fact is it's getting better.
And,
I mean,
and
we make our
lot,
mistakes, but it is getting...
There's so much to love about it.
Yeah.
There's so much to love. Well, I wanted to chat with you because there aren't many people who have been here as long as you and have been as involved. Well, I mean in terms of your involvement, right? I moved here in 99. I started getting involved probably 2008 in local politics and local government issues, a lot of land use issues. And you've been very focused on creating a thriving downtown. And so tell me about the founding of DSA. When did that happen? I know you were really involved with that. And why? Why did you start
there? It started actually with Ernie Ritz was Main Street.
And the Gator Club.
Beg your pardon?
He owns the Gator Club.
Yeah. He did own the Gator Club at that time. He doesn't own it any longer.
Oh, okay.
But he was, he's in construction. Construction. And so it was Ernie, representing Main Street Merchants. Denise Koval was from Burn Square.
Shock Festival.
Michael Bush was for Rosemary, which at that time was really...
Not much.
There was not much in Rosemary.
Yeah, not much.
And I was Palm Avenue. So I think I got Mall, right? And we would meet, which for me was a terrible time, 7:30 in the morning in the Crest building.
Just so, this show is kind of early for you, isn't it?
It's true, but I made it.
You did.
Anyway, we would meet, and we did a lot of things. You know, we advocated for the merchants with the city and... So that started that. And then we began talking about forming something larger. And, you know, Ernie was in, and then he thought better of it. And then he wanted to do it again. He thought better of it. But we needed to use his 501c3 because it's really very difficult to get a not-for-profit. So one day, Ernie decided it was a good idea. So we used, he did the... technical part, and I did the running around and getting people involved. And then we thought of someone from every single group that we could think of. We had the city manager came to our meetings.
Who was Bob Bartolotta?
Bob Bartolotta at that time. Who else? Anyway, we... John Harshman from Main Street. People from... The only thing we missed out by mistake was CCNA, and that was my error. You know, I didn't think...
Coalition of City Neighborhood Associations.
Yeah,
CCNA.
And that would have involved the residents, and I think we need to do that more because they are really an important part of our downtown that's really quite often missed. And now that I live downtown... For the past...
And now you are a resident.
12 years, yeah. I realize how much the... We might think, oh, it's great to have a band and, you know, but if you're lying in bed and all you can hear is the bass of the band, it doesn't matter if it's once in a while. But if it's like 4 days in a row and then 3 weeks in a row at that, it gets too much.
Yeah, there's definitely noise issues that residents are concerned about.
Yeah, and there is, you've got to have a balance. You've got to have, you have to have parties. You don't want to be living in a dead zone.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't want to be Ybor City.
Yeah.
So there is something in the middle, and we all have to learn to give a little and be satisfied a little.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, there's some people who look at downtown and feel like it's getting too much in that direction. And there are definitely articles and studies out there about what kind of a mix of businesses makes the most sense for downtown. You know, how much retail, and by retail, you know, I distinguish restaurants. That restaurant is a very particular use. A bar is a very particular use. Retail, I'm talking about products, you know, and sometimes services, but even then I'm not sure. So what are your thoughts about, because you've served on the Downtown Improvement District Advisory Board for the city for quite some time, and we'll get to what that is in a little bit. But how about that mix of downtown uses? Is it where it should be? Or as a retailer of, you know, a very, it's a high-end product, but as a retailer, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's tempting to say like there are too many restaurants and bars, but... In Sarasota, what they make for dinner is reservations, so we have to serve the population, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really very hard to say. I think you have to leave it a little bit up to the people who are paying the bill. If something's really good, it will survive, and if it's not, it won't.
Yeah.
You know, we have people who come in, And it's heartbreaking, really. They take all their retirement funds and say, oh, I always wanted to have a, got to be careful what I say because I don't want to single out, but you know, I always wanted to have a birdhouse store because I love birds.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't think, how many birdhouses do you have to sell to pay your rent, pay your staff? Retail is hard.
Yeah.
So, there are people who come and fail, sadly. But I think if something is really needed and people love it and you have a little bit of a cushion to get mm-hmm. you over the initial time,
mm-hmm.
People do succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the right balance is, but I do think that one should be a little, I don't know how you can handle it because you should think a little bit about, we have one block downtown that maybe has 9 bars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really is the dirtiest street in town, and we can't keep it clean because of, you know, what mm-hmm. goes on at nights. So I don't know what you can do. Can the city say only so many bars per block?
Well, zoning is an issue, right? I mean, there are ways that cities do.
There must be.
Yeah,
and
there,
I'm not aware of what it would be, but.
And some of it, too, is. You know, I think that at a certain point, office uses were permitted. Ground floor office is not the highest and best use for a downtown because
the
level at the bottom, you talk about the elements of walkability, right? So a walk has to be comfortable. In Florida, that means shade, whether it's trees or awnings. We need shade for people to walk comfortably in a downtown. I think that's part of the reason why you've got that section near the Baptist Church. It may not be the most walkable. There's not a lot of trees, you know.
It's true.
Yeah. So it needs to be comfortable, needs to be safe, right? But it needs to be interesting and purposeful. And what that means is, you know, you should be able to get your daily needs met, like mail a letter. You know, send a package, buy a pair of socks, go to the grocery store. It was huge when Whole Foods came, right? Because people could get their groceries. But the interesting part is window shopping for the, you know, and that's where putting offices on the ground floor detracts from the interesting part. That's a required element of walkability. So, I mean, are these financial institutions necessarily the best use for ground floor?
Well, you're quite right. But it seems to me that not that many years ago, there was some ordinance that on A streets, which would be Main Street, Palm Avenue, you know, like mm-hmm. primary streets,
yeah.
you weren't allowed to have financial institutions, banks, all the things that break up retail, that
yes.
stop people. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But so I don't know what happened to that because they're creeping up all over the place.
And you know what's interesting? If you look at 1350 Main, so this was a big condominium, and you look at the Mark, which is near State Street and Main Street. It's a big building. The Mark has this gallery, you know, a covered area.
Arcade,
yeah. And then, you know, 1350, they're both dominated on the ground floor by banks. And I'd be willing to bet you that what was promised or what the renderings probably showed was shopping. And
well, it was zoned retail. It was on retail, but
yeah.
but they built the building. The problem is that anything in the flood zone has to be built 4 feet above grade. And, you know, the entrance.
Yeah.
So they built it, and it was zoned for retail, but it has proved now several times since then. There are many buildings I could mention in town where they were built up, and there's retail, and it's not rentable. You can't. Nobody wants to do retail 4 feet in the air. It doesn't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So
because you're looking at you're not
you're looking at feet when you look
yeah.
in, you know, from the street.
Yeah.
But 1350 was the first one that I recall, and I remember Andrew Foley owned that part of the building, the ground floor retail. Mm-hmm. Well, ground floor, 4 feet up retail. And I think it was 2 years and he couldn't sell it to anyone. Mm-hmm. And then finally he sold it to a bank. Mm-hmm. And the bank was there for a little while, really nice bank, great people. And it failed, or they moved. I mean, it failed there, not the bank. Mm-hmm. Then another bank came in about a year later, and they too lasted about 2 years, and then they moved. And then it was empty for another couple of years. And so yeah. They even have a hard time keeping banks in that street.
Yeah, these are the like details of planning, right, really make a big difference.
Huge.
And one of the things that I wonder about, and I'm curious to get your take on this, like if you go to Europe, and I can remember, I mean, there's plenty of examples of this, but we were staying in Rome and we're very fortunate that we get to travel, my husband and I, the way we do. There was a shop that might have been smaller than a lot of people's kitchen pantries. I mean, if you have like, if you know what a butler's pantry is, right? That's a pretty healthy pantry, walk-in pantry. This shop was the size of a walk-in pantry, and it was full of beautiful jewelry and accessories. And I thought, and it was obviously doing well. And I thought, look at how efficient that is. You know, it's tiny, but it's gorgeous. It's like a little jewel, literally a jewel box. And we don't have that kind of retail here, but wow, I'm sure it feeds a family, you know. And it just seems to me like there's room for a lot more creativity in our planning in our codes to make way for that kind of possibility anyway.
Well, this is true. I think, though, we're on the cusp of getting something exciting things
downtown. Do you think
downtown.
So?
Yeah, well, I know two people who are vying for something very special, and it depends which one gets it.
But, okay.
But we are looking at getting some really high-end, I mean, I'll just throw out one, but like Gucci, Ferragamo, those kind of stores. Mm-hmm. And Robert Gibbs, who's the marketing guru for the U.S., we bought him here about 15 years ago. And I'd seen something like that happen in Montreal. They had turned a small department store into all these fabulous things.
Little boutiques.
And I asked him, like, what about us? And he said, oh, you're not ready for that. Mm-hmm. And so I saw him probably 5 years ago, and he sought me out, and he said, well, you're getting ready now. And he came about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks, and he said, oh, Sarasota is definitely ready now. And if he doesn't know, I mean, nobody knows. He's really good. So it's just a question of where it goes.
Yeah. We're talking about two things, which both should fit, right? I'm talking about a little more homegrown.
I see. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a more local sort of interesting shops. And then you're talking about the more well-known national or international brands. And both.
Nice to have a nice mix.
Exactly. Have a place here. And there is the Downtown Master Plan Committee looking at maybe they can find a way to encourage more retail. What did you think? Let's talk about the Downtown Improvement District, because a lot of people, I'm not sure they know what that is. But the merchants in downtown Sarasota, or the landowners, actually tax themselves and put the money.
Yeah, the building owners.
The building owners.
Yeah, commercial building owners.
Okay, so there's a tax, and then it goes into under the purview of the Downtown Improvement District, right?
Yes, it's a self-assessment, and it comes on your tax bill it's a mill rate. It's based on the mill rate.
Yeah.
And so everyone was solicited in the beginning. That was John Moran and a whole bunch of other guys who had been involved with the DID.
Mm-hmm.
And they started it.
It's called the DID, the
Downtown Improvement District.
Yeah.
And they really went and solicited every single person within this small area of downtown. It's a very tiny area, which we could talk about too. The reason downtown is kind of hemmed in between 41, 301, and Fruitville.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get past an almost impenetrable barrier to go to Marina Jack's or towards your place or north, you know, to get to Rosemary. So,
you mean walking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
A little bit of,
But we do walk a lot in Sarasota, and that's good. That was part of the plan. You know, everybody wanted it, and it's working.
Yeah.
But anyway, they went to everyone within this district and got their agreement, the agreement of the majority of people, and it went through as a tax. So the city is our fiduciary. The money goes to the city, and they hold on to it, and then we get to spend it. But increasingly, the city, not the commission, have got involved in how we spend our money. There was a lot more freedom initially for us to be creative and do what we wanted.
But, well, the whole point was it was kind of a self-directed tax, right? That you all, the people were voluntarily
self-taxation
themselves so that they could improve downtown. When you talk about this heightened involvement of the city, not the commission, can you give me some examples of that?
Well, one example, for instance, is the former city manager came to us one day and said he wanted to get $50,000 for the trolley, which was a good, you know, the trolley was a good idea. And he said, well, it's an ask, it's not a demand. You know, if you give me $50,000, I'll be happy. You give me $40,000, give me $5,000, I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So we voted, I think, to give $10,000, and then the city just took the $50,000, and we fought it really pretty hard. And at a certain point, you have to just give up and realize that you have no control. But the fact is that the trolley is a good idea.
And, oh, it is.
And we are behind it.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that, and I've been asking them, so the DID money is supposed to provide a heightened level of service to the people in that district.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I thought if they put more stops within the DID, that would satisfy that, and that would be a good use of our $50,000. A year.
A heightened level of service.
Yeah, well, it would
stops
just qualify.
Downtown,
yeah.
The district.
But
somehow
that's becoming very difficult. But, you know, it's very hard not to like the trolley because it is working. I see people.
You're talking about the Bay Runner.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is working. That's great. But it's concerning that the city manager would do that.
Well, but we had also, they wanted money for the enhanced streetscape, Main Street enhanced streetscape. And so we were talking with them about doing that because we were in favor of it. And then we put a caveat that we would give them $300,000, I believe. I didn't know I was going to talk about that, or I would have looked it up.
But we
said we'd give them the money, but it was contingent upon them building a parking garage near the bus station somewhere that would make up for the parking they would lose on Main Street. And parking is a major issue downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all the way along for probably about a year. And then somehow they took the money, because they have the money, don't forget.
They're the custodians of the money.
And they took the money and said, and there's no garage. And then they said, oh, no, that was a misunderstanding. So it's disappointing.
Yeah.
But we have to get over it. I mean, it's just.
Well, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think that the city government has any business operating that way when this taxpayer dollars, it's a special district. I live in a special district. Golden Gate Point is the same kind of situation. We tax ourselves for the streetscape, and we have to pay a bond. We did a traffic calming design and lots of landscaping, but we pay extra tax for that, and we have neighborhood advocates who are watching and, you know, paying attention.
Basically like our board.
Exactly. There isn't actually a board, but yes. I mean, we have a neighborhood board. But I think it's frankly galling that you all have a board that is not, you know, that has allocated funds, that votes, that meets, that there are minutes and all this stuff. And then the city just...
Yeah, videos.
It's on video. And then the city has just... overrided you just by fiat.
Well, when you say the city, not the commissioners.
No,
but it could have been, you know.
Right. Well, it seemed to me that the commissioners step in and go, hey, what are you doing?
Well, yeah, but the commissioners are meant to be like in charge, right? Not the city manager.
You'd think so.
Well, yeah, but everybody in this town is doing someone else's job. It's just crazy, you know. If you look at the job description and look at what's happening, it's really, we need to realign.
Tighten things up a bit. So let me ask you, well, you brought up a lot of things there, but city manager search, because, you know, this, what you're describing with somebody just hearing a directive, but then deciding they're going to do something else with the money that, you know, downtown improvement district money. Even if it's for good purpose, because you're saying the Bay Runner's successful, you know, improving Main Street and landscaping. Nobody was arguing about whether or not the use of the money was good. But that kind of a culture where you're demonstrating to people who work in the city when the leader is just doing their own thing and disrespecting citizen oversight, the board, I think that's very troubling. I don't like seeing that. And we're searching for a new city manager. I'm curious to know your thoughts. What kind of leadership would you like to see?
Well, personally, and, you know, it's not my, what do they call it, my wheelhouse these days. But I always thought we need an elected mayor.
Oh, you and I totally disagree.
Disagree?
Well, but that's fine.
Well, it's fine. And also, you might know a lot more about it. And I might like to talk to you one day and find out. And I might change my mind.
Okay.
I just think you have some say in it. At least you can fire the person. And you've got some control if you've got an elected mayor. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you appoint people or, you know, I don't know.
Well, I think we need commissioners who really drive the bus.
Well, that's true. And our commission, delightful as they are,
don't always
drive the bus. Yeah. And, you know, I've sat at many meetings and you see the city manager tell them that they can't do something or whatever. And the fact is they could tell him. So they have a lot more power than they take.
Yeah. And, you know, they're supposed to be in charge. I think they're very used to being handled, not all of them, but some of them. And, you know, you can grow in that position, but let's face it, it's easier if someone is telling you what to do, if that's how you want to roll.
Wouldn't be easier for me.
No,
I'm too opinionated.
That is not how you roll.
No, but,
you know, for me, the elected mayor issue, we don't have a city, we don't have a bench of people working within the city that's deep enough to have, because an elected mayor really has to run things and be very familiar with, you know, the technical aspects and utilities and all of this. And there, that's one piece is, you know, do we have the bench for that? But the other piece is the proclivity toward corruption, the dark money aspect in local elections, which makes me very uncomfortable. I think you're going to get far less corruption and a more community-focused leadership if you have a commission, you know, five people and not just one.
But couldn't you have like an elected mayor and still have a commission?
You could have, but that's not, yeah.
That, like that basically would be, an advisory board for him, which is what they are now.
Well, that's the weakness for, you mean an advisory board for the city manager?
Yeah.
Which is not what we want. You could have a commission where everybody votes, but one person is elected as the spokesperson mayor. You could do that, but I think people, you know, we voted on this many times in the city, and it keeps coming back to the to what we have. I think now we really just need to encourage our commission to own their power, you know?
Yeah, I think that's perhaps it. But, you know, we need...
Go ahead.
Maybe this is not right, but I really feel we need to pay them more because it really is a full-time job.
It is.
And it's a thankless job because whatever you do, someone's complaining.
Well, and that's always going to be true.
Well, right? True. Yeah, but I mean, you need danger pay. So,
you need to be able to raise a family. I mean, if we want people to make this a career choice, right now, even though they just got a raise, they make about $40,000, and that is
it. Might be a little more, but you know, it particularly in this town, $40,000 is like chump change, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, not really, but you know what I mean.
Well, it's
difficult to live on that because everything's so expensive.
Very much so.
So
if you just joined us, you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and my guest today is Eileen Knorr. Why do I say Eileen Hampshire, and Eileen has been a longtime advocate for a thriving downtown, a thriving business community in downtown Sarasota. So we're talking about what's happened over the years and what your experience has been with city government. I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned parking. And there was an article in the newspaper back in February that there's a, I believe, some kind of landscaping plan with widening sidewalks that would remove 100 parking spaces from downtown Sarasota. And it was you and the proprietor of a boutique downtown who kind of raised your hands on the did board and said, whoa, the last thing we need is to lose parking spaces, right? Where does that stand?
We're still fighting it. I mean, but I don't know where it stands. That's what I was talking about before, the Main Street streetscape change. And that was the plan, that we would support it, but we needed to have extra parking. And Bob Gibbs said when he was here, you know, the marketing guru, said don't let them take away even one parking spot. Every parking spot is enormously important to the retailers because if you can't park, people have choices. Mm-hmm. You know, people have choices about where they live, if they'll be in Sarasota or not, or what they'll pay for things and where they'll shop. And we have to make it pleasant for them. You know, to be able to walk out of your condo and go shopping is really nice. I mean, Whole Foods is just great. When it first came, it was really hard for them to make it, I think, because there weren't enough people downtown, and they grew into it. Mm-hmm. So I got off topic, but I would like
to... No, that's okay. Well, we're talking about parking.
No, I know that, but I just thought I was going to launch into something else.
Well, it'll come back. It was a streetscape.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I didn't forget it. But,
no.
But I was...
I do want to ask you, because you know, in talking about parking, you have said to me... I've experienced a surge in the price of parking. Like sometimes I'll park in front of your shop and just walk in, spend an hour to say hello. And what used to cost me a dollar or two last time cost me $6.
Oh, but
and
it was worth it.
It was totally worth it. But I was shocked. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah. On top of that, they increased the hours, but not enough. For instance, a lot of construction workers and house cleaners and, you know, service people park on the street. But they don't have to start paying till 10. So they come at 7. So from 7 till 10, it's free. Mm-hmm. Okay. 10 till 7 or 8 at night. I should know.
I think it's 8.
Yeah, it's 8. Okay. But then at 8 o'clock, it's free. Yeah. So the restaurants and bars get a free trip. It's all great. But for the retailers, there's great competition for those spaces. If you're building out a condo and you've got your truck and all your tools are in the truck, it's worth it to you to pay whatever you have to pay and go up and, you know, then mm-hmm. to go back to the garage and so on. But it really is hard on the retailers. When they were building, we had 4 construction sites on Palm Avenue last year and for the past couple of years. And when I woke up, because I live upstairs, when I looked out my window in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, every single space on both sides of the street was full, and they never moved all day.
Oh, wow.
And at 3:30 when they went home, you know, now you try and run a business on 1.5 hours a day, and people who have mm-hmm. children have gone and picked up children at school. It really affected the streets really severely. Yeah. And we got nobody even thinks about it or considers us.
So there's still a way to go with parking. You've talked to me too, is it saying, making a distinction. Are you charging for parking to make money, or are you charging for parking to further another aim, which I think would mean not having somebody do exactly that, just park there all day. You need some turnover, so retail, yeah. right? Yeah. Where does that stand? Because you served on the parking committee too.
Well, I've been on the parking committee as long as there was a parking committee. Right now we don't have one. I think it was 8 years. And in all that time, the city's goal and the yeah. parking committee's goal was turnover. And we really worked towards that. And we weren't totally successful. We've had a lot of failures in parking.
Why is the turnover important? It's really so retailers can thrive,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Okay. And if we don't have thriving retail, you're going to lose the residents because it's boring. You come yeah. out at night. I mean, basically, I probably sell more carpets at night mm-hmm. when I've got all my lights on. And people take a walk after dinner. Husband and wife are together. They look through the window, see something they like. They come back and buy it. Mm-hmm. So that's really a very good thing. Mm-hmm. But you really need to have people just don't want to go and buy a luxury item or anything. Come downtown and then find out that they, they find out that they can't park or it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah. So is the... What do you attribute? I know so there was a parking committee. There isn't anymore.
And now it's all about, as I said, before it was about turnover. Now it's all about the money.
So that's your observation, that now it's about making yeah. revenue.
Yeah. I mean, okay. we used to have a little 10-minute spot outside the bank for people to use the ATM. And I asked for it to be put back. And well, they said, well, look, you know, people have 10 minutes. But, you know, think about it. I wanted a 10-minute space where you get out of your car, you go ATM, 10 minutes is plenty. Yeah. Then you get back in. Or you have people who, you get out of park your car, get out, go to the station, don't know your license plate number, go back, take a photo of your license plate, go back
parking.
To the thing, yeah. put the thing in, you get your 10 minutes free. You probably used 10 minutes already.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit because you are also a very active patron of the symphony, right? And you've been for years. And you have some ideas, you know, when people have criticized the city regarding the symphony leaving. Tell me about... There actually are possibilities, I think, for the symphony to be in Sarasota. But what are your thoughts about that choice that the symphony made, or what's happened over the years regarding keeping cultural institutions in the city?
Well, we've lost a lot of things. I mean, we lost Moat Marine. Like, the sexy part went to Lakewood Ranch. You know, we get the research station for $1 a year, you know, but... Anyway, I think that I know it's very hard. I shouldn't say exactly what I think, but everybody knows what I think who knows me. I think it was a very poor choice of space. I think it was a very poor decision when the city turned them down for going into Payne Park.
Uh-huh.
I think that was ideal.
Well, yeah. Explain, though, because you said there was a way that they could have added
footage
to the park.
The night that they went to the commission, it was one of those nights that everybody sat there till midnight. They wanted 7 acres of Payne Park, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of discussion, and they were turned down. But a few of us, especially Mark Kaufman, who really wanted it there, looked into it and found there was a way to add 10 acres to Payne Park. So we would give 7 acres to the symphony, but it would be a net gain of 3 acres, and it would be really a beautiful thing. And Mark had a local architect do a drawing, a rendering of a fabulous little hall. Well, that wasn't what the symphony wanted, but I think we should have worked on it a little longer because there was enough goodwill on both sides to have come up with something that would have been really good for the symphony and really good for Sarasota.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the symphony are telling me that, or someone from the symphony told me that, you know, where they're building it, which I...
Fruitville and Cattleman.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, you can go to Sam's and pick up a chicken, then go to the symphony, I don't think.
It's not a very sophisticated choice, that's for sure.
No, and also that piece of land would have been fabulous, I think. It's worth what you're paying, which is nothing. You know, I can think for nothing. But I think it would be a great piece of land to have had public housing or some sort of skewed or low income housing or workforce
affordable housing.
Well, whatever the word is this week.
Yeah. But, I know. It does change.
But yeah. But housing that working people can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And then beef up the bus service down Fruitville to like every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Didn't happen because they're into it now. But I was thinking the other day that if they stay there, not if they're going to stay there, because they put a lot of money into it now. And nobody cares that I think it's wrong. But is there a way to have a smaller concert hall downtown?
Mm-hmm.
So that the people on Longboat, who are the major constituents of the orchestra,
mm-hmm.
and people downtown, look at the kind of condos they're building downtown,
mm-hmm.
that they could go, like, walk or just go over. What people do, the people who go to the symphony, you know, the ones who are the real patrons, they go with their friends, they go out for dinner to a nice restaurant, and then mm-hmm. they go to the symphony.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to come down Longboat, drive down Fruitville, go near the highway, and eat where?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
just not going to happen.
No, so. I that was the thing that really surprised me is, I mean, if you just look at who their subscriber base is, like where do the folks live that frequent the symphony that are the backbone of that organization? I have a hard time believing they're in Lakewood Ranch. I think that they're downtown Sarasota and Longboat, as you describe, maybe Siesta. So to move, if they're moving out there with the expectation that those folks are going to follow them, I'm not so sure that they will. And I have to believe that there's still options within the city of Sarasota, because Carnegie Hall, you know, I think Kelly Franklin has done some very interesting research about the footprints of different symphony halls or performing arts halls and where they could fit. You really don't need that much space, relatively speaking. I have a hard time believing we don't have some space like that here.
Well, we have plenty of spaces.
Yeah.
But also, you have to think, it's like to backtrack a little.
Sure.
Just like I could think of like how big Carnegie Hall is, what they need and so on. But really, you know, you have to leave it to the symphony and the symphony manager
sure.
to decide what they need. And they've decided they want somewhere where they can bring young people in and the musicians can teach. And that's laudable. It's really a good thing. So I've been thinking, I'm trying to change my, I'm trying to get off my soapbox and think, let them, I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do there, but is there something we could do downtown? Is there, and there are plenty of places. For mm-hmm. instance, there's that shopping center on 301, the empty shopping center.
Is that 41? the near
301? 41. You're right, 41. I always mix them.
There's
up.
A very empty shopping center.
That's the one.
On the North Trail of 41. It's near Myrtle.
Yeah, that's the one I mean.
Just south of Myrtle. And there's, God, there's been an, it used to have the old McCurdy's Comedy Club was there before they moved to Ringling Boulevard in downtown Sarasota. And now there's like an Amscot there. And not much else.
Nothing.
You know, that's quite a big piece of land.
Yeah, it is. That would make a great spot. And then you could have a water taxi going from...
you're getting ahead of my next question.
Oh,
but
sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know, from Longboat across, or you know, and that would cut down traffic enormously. They're always wanting to cut down traffic. Mm-hmm. Well, look how much traffic you cut down. I mean, if you go from Fruitville and 41... Mm-hmm. And go down across the bridge around St. Armand's, up the thing. Look how much time you could save by just having either a water taxi. And now Uber is so inexpensive and so easy in town.
Yeah, but it's still
a car
on the road, you know.
Yeah.
It is still a car on the road. Well, that was my next question.
Yeah, but take away the car, you would have to come in, though. I mean.
Yeah, so, well, that's true. You wouldn't need the parking. There have been a lot of ideas over the years that sound great. And you mentioned, you know, the downtown marketing guru that came in, Mr. Gibbs. We've had Jeff Speck come in. It's been kind of frustrating for me to watch these principles of walkability are well known, right? And the city will embrace them in theory, but then not necessarily in practice. Like, I look at how the View was designed, which is that big building where the Westin Hotel is part of it. It's at the traffic circle at Gulfstream and 41. And there's no retail on the bottom. And this is just a key element for walkability. And they simply are building the same kind of suburban designs that don't work for a city. So that's my editorial comment. What ideas have you seen? And you've already talked about one. I want to talk about that one again. But what ideas have you seen that for some reason just never gained traction, but they're still good ideas that we need to look at?
Well, one of them, you know, when I look back, a lot of times we've just been like too smart and done it too early. And it just, and it failed. It just wasn't
ready.
Population here now, then that we need to do it. But when I think that Butch Isaac and his brother started Pineapple Square, which is now, the Mark, and they brought in, Brooks Brothers, Eileen Fisher, Sur La Table, Pensy Spices. Oh gosh.
A lot of them are gone.
Well, yeah,
because
they were too early.
Too
it
early.
Just wasn't the population. It wasn't that it wasn't a good idea. And, of course, I think the economy tanked around 2007. So that wasn't that was a sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are so many ideas.
The water taxi idea is one.
Water taxi is one.
For sure.
Yeah.
I like urban reforestation. I mean, there are so many parts of downtown that suffer from a lack of shade.
Well, this is true, but it's kind of difficult to get the right tree. You know, once you get a little bit involved, everything's so easy when you don't know much about
it. You could do awnings, too.
Awnings are good. Mm-hmm. Trees are better, I think.
They are. Yeah.
But if you look, like those the trees that they want, I think a certain kind of olive tree that they put out.
Black olives.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But, you know, they're filthy for the sidewalk.
Well,
so, you know,
to me, it's like you want a tree that doesn't have leaves that drop. I understand that some are cleaner than others, but to me, it's like, so sweep the leaves up. I mean, is it really that?
You say sweep. What they do is blow them and they go into the gutter and then they go into the storm water and they end up on the beach. So, you know, that's another thing. It's always, you know,
but. What I'm saying is we can solve these problems, can we?
We should be able to.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I think you could be able to vacuum up your grass clippings and your thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just make it someone else's problem.
Well, yeah, that's true. So are you, you're going to stay involved. I have to say, Eileen, so if you don't know Eileen, you're like my role model for the rest of my life, because my gosh, you've had some big birthdays and here you are running your business, you know, serving on advisory boards. Pretty awesome.
Well, yeah, but you remember that woman who wrote, like, Stop the World, I Want to Get Off? And I just don't know how.
Yeah.
Irma Bombeck.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. What would you like to see? I'm going to bring it back to the leadership at City Hall and the culture, your experience on advisory boards. Would you like to see some changes in the culture at City Hall?
Well, I think we're getting it, aren't we? I mean, we're getting a new city manager.
And, well, we will have one, yeah.
And you know, I remember when we actually selected Mr. Bartolotta, and of course, a lot of people didn't like him either. I mean, they, you know,
it's a tough crowd, right?
Very much,
it's
yeah.
A tough crowd.
And they're watching, and they want to make sure, you know, so don't make any mistakes, and which is impossible. So it is almost a thankless task. I don't know how much you couldn't pay me enough to be city manager here. Mm. It's just. Too many people. Actually, something I observed is we have a lot of people who came from towns or cities that have a lot of, they had a lot of influence in their city.
Yes.
And they moved down here and, you know, they were pretty entitled in their city. So I think we have, honestly, I include myself in that.
Okay.
More entitled people here than we deserve. You know, so it's pretty hard to run it when people have been the manager of a major bank. They've been, people that you've been here have had amazing positions.
Careers, yes.
Yeah, where they came from. Amazing careers, and they know a lot, and they're well informed. And so it makes your job. You can't get away with anything. You know, so it is hard.
Yeah, it is hard.
I don't know. But I do think it, when we went, I don't know the process they're going through now, but last time, because that was, he was just promoted, but the last time we had a city manager search, the general public and the people downtown who were involved were a lot more involved in choosing that person.
Yes.
And I think that we did a good job.
I agree. That was Tom Barwin's the search that resulted in having Tom Barwin be our city manager. And I agree with you to see a very collaborative, inclusive process. And I would add one that actually respects ethical norms, because the former city manager is not supposed to be choosing their replacement. And unfortunately, one of our city commissioners doesn't seem to respect that code of ethics, and neither does the former city manager, because the ICMA, International City County Managers Association, is really clear about that, that they're supposed to be hands off. But that more collaborative, inclusive process with citizens would be fantastic. And so on that note, we need to say goodbye, Eileen Hampshire. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate all the work that you've done to bring downtown to where we are today. You've been one of instrumental person in that ongoing effort, and just want to acknowledge how you've served the city. So thanks.
Well, thank you. I've tried. I hope some of it was good.
Oh, I think it was. And everybody, thank you so much for joining me. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Men no like the dreadlocks man. The dreadlocks man no like the Baba man. No. The police men no like the dreadlocks man. love.